Hey, what's going on? Welcome back. This is Kevin Woodman with Philadelphia Eagles Talk. I'm your host, and this is the second episode of this podcast. So if this is something that interests you, if you're an Eagles fan and you like what you hear today, make sure to stick around by hitting the subscribe button. Other than that, I'm going to go over, obviously, one of the biggest topics in football right now, one of the biggest stories in the game right now, and that's Jalen Hurts. I don't know if national media attention is giving enough attention to him. It seems like a lot of people are still kind of debating the topic of whether or not Carson Wentz is good, whether or not Carson Wentz is salvageable, whether or not he should be the quarterback of the future, because he's still the biggest name. He's still the name on the marquee. He's still the $100 million man, and I think a lot of people are having a hard time turning the page. So I want to talk a lot about Carson Wentz in today's podcast, but I also want to talk a lot about Jalen Hurts, because he's the feel-good story right now. He's the guy that came off the bench cold and basically lit a fire under this team and led this team to a victory yesterday against the number one Saints defense, one of the hottest teams in the league, the hottest team in the NFC, the number one seed in the NFC before we knock them off. So let's set the stage here, first of all. If you're listening to this and you're not an Eagles fan, or if you are an Eagles fan, I don't know if we appreciate enough how much I hate the Saints and how much you as a fan should hate the Saints as well. I just want to set the stage here a little bit. The Saints, as well as the Seahawks, maybe the Packers, these teams should all kind of be seen as rivalry teams because in the 21st century, the Eagles are in that class of best teams in the NFC. And some teams, the three teams I just mentioned mostly, have been teams that really have given us have had our hands full with. They pretty much have gotten the better of us, and in a lot of ways might be responsible for us not getting another Super Bowl in the 21st century. The Saints especially. Now the Saints are a team that they haven't just beaten us in the playoffs and beaten us in the regular season. They've rubbed it in. This is one of the few teams out of all the teams I just mentioned. They're one of the few teams that felt the need to really stick that knife in deep and twist it. Unlike some of the other teams, you know, like the Seahawks and the Packers really have more class. But going back through the rivalry years, and you can call it a rivalry, although I know a lot of people might not think of it that way because we have enough rivals in the NFC East. But I consider the Saints to be a bit of a rivalry based off the fact that they have knocked us out within the last 20 years in the Sean Payton era. They have knocked us out of the playoffs three times. So that's enough reason alone for you to feel that you should hate this team. But the one year that we did succeed and we did get through with a Super Bowl victory, that was also the year after where they felt the need to talk about it and say that they would have beat our ass if they would have played us, if they hadn't blown their own lead against the Minnesota Vikings. They basically felt, you know, strong enough to say that they would have beat us if they would have played us, which is something that's pretty unheard of. I mean, if you lost in your own right in embarrassing fashion the way that they did to the Vikings, it's pretty rare for a team coming off of a loss like that to still have the stones to say, you know what, we would have beat you guys, we would have won the Super Bowl. I mean, that's just incredible on its own. But the following year when we did play them, they felt the need to prove a point and really rub it in. Like I said, really just put a drubbing on the Super Bowl champion Eagles and beat us by a score of 48-7, which I still think is the largest margin of victory or the largest margin of loss by a defending Super Bowl champion, especially Malcolm Jenkins, who defected to the Saints. He had a lot to say about that afterwards. He felt pretty upset that they were rubbing it in, that they were basically pouring it on. And that was also a game where, if you remember correctly, I think that was the first game of several that we were missing basically every key component to our secondary. So we were definitely not in that game full strength. I mean, even injuries with the Eagles has been something that we've been dealing with for years now. It's an ongoing issue, but that was kind of like the apex of it. I think that was one of the most decimated moments of our roster. And the Saints took full advantage of it and felt the need to really salt it in good with that 48-7 win. I mean, there's lots of moments like that. I mean, there was a story that after they beat us in another game, that they felt the need to circle the building with the team bus before leaving several times, just to let us know that they were there and that they were partying it up. So the Saints, like I said, this should definitely be looked at as a rivalry team. And this should definitely be looked at. It should be felt as a rivalry win. I don't care that Drew Brees wasn't there. I don't care that they were missing a few players. We're always missing players. This should feel good no matter what. So going back through the history, like I said, that's not the only game that we should feel salty about. They've beaten us three times in the playoffs. I remember one playoff loss was a close one. We lost. That was the Sheldon Brown on Reggie Bush hit. We lost that game. That was a good game. Went down to the wire. Pretty much all of them going down to the wire. I can't say like they've owned us in success when it comes to the playoffs. I mean, our loss a couple years ago with Nick Foles and Alshon Jeffrey dropping the what, you know, they were on a game winning drive and he dropped it. It was intercepted. It was game over. That was another close game, another tightly fought game. That was another game I feel like we could have won. We started off so great. We were blowing them out early, and then we just couldn't continue that success in their house. And there was also the loss Nick Foles suffered, his first playoff loss to the Saints when he went down and he scored the go-ahead touchdown, and then we gave it that big kick return, and they just ran the ball down our throat and kicked a field goal. These are all moments that should really drive it home, that we should really hate this Saints team, because they've had the better of us, especially when it matters most in the playoffs. They've sent us packing three times in this century, in the 21st century. So with all that being said, this victory should feel great. And believe me, it does. This is one of the most satisfying victories I can imagine outside of beating the Cowboys, which obviously they're a bit of a joke right now. So it doesn't even feel that great. But to beat the Saints when they're at their best, this is a team that's won 9 straight games. Like I said, they have the number one defense in the league going into this game. Taysom Hill is no excuse, because they've won a lot of games with Taysom Hill. Just like last year, they won a lot of games with Teddy Bridgewater. This is a team that knows how to win games, and they are firing on all cylinders. So for the Eagles to do what they did, it was ultra impressive. But like I said, the main story is Carson Wentz and Jalen Hurts. Carson Wentz from the bench doing nothing, and Jalen Hurts on the field doing everything. I mean, if you watch the game, if you just look at the stats, you can look at the stats and say it doesn't really look like Jalen Hurts really played that great. But if you actually watch the game, it was all the little things that Carson Wentz was struggling with. And that's really where this has been so hard to watch Carson, is because he hasn't been able to do the little things, not just the big things. You know what I mean? Like, he hasn't been bombing it down the field and completing long passes and all kind of stuff. No, it's the little things like getting the ball out with timing, avoiding the blitz, pre-snap reads, a lot of simpler things that really should come easy for a guy who's been in the league for 5 years. They really came easy. It looked apparently easy to Jalen Hurts in his first NFL start and in his first NFL action last week against the Packers. The first play that he completed, that 34-yard pass to Jalen Reagor, there was a guy right in his face. It was an overload blitz, which is something that the Saints did a lot in this game yesterday. They really sent a lot of overload blitzes. They really tried to rattle this young quarterback by sending more than we had blockers, like the Alshon Jeffrey touchdown that he threw, where there was basically a guy right in his face, just laid him out, but he still was able to step into that throw and put that ball perfectly where it needed to be. Very impressive play. You know what I mean? That's the thing about Jalen Hurts' game yesterday. If you're going to give Carson Wentz credit, which a lot of people did last year, when he won the final four games, if you're going to give Carson Wentz credit for what he did with what little he had around him, that needs to be the same talk right now with Jalen Hurts. He just went against the number one defense in the league with very little around him and got it done. Him and basically Miles Sanders were basically the two guys. It was just those two guys. The offensive line is decimated, just like it's been. Although I still feel like there's a lot of talent on the offensive line, even at this point. I'm not going to necessarily act like he's playing behind a terrible line, but I mean, the offensive line is decimated. We can't hide from that. The receiving core is down quite a few. I mean, Alshon Jeffrey, he feels like he shouldn't even be playing. I almost feel like they're trying to salvage his value so they can trade him once again in the offseason, but he did catch a touchdown, which is the only pass I even remember him catching. I do feel like they'd be better with Travis Fulgham out there, which I'm not going to get into right now, but the receiving core is really not that great. They did get Zach Ertz back, although Zach Ertz looks like a shell of himself. I don't know what to make of him right now. I feel like he's somebody that should try to move on from as well, but ultimately, if the argument last year was Carson Wentz did all this despite having nothing around him, I have not heard that argument yet about Jalen Hurts, and it's even more impressive when you consider this guy probably doesn't even have a mastery of the playbook. He probably only has a handful of plays at his disposal that he feels comfortable running. And I think that, if you look at the full playbook and then you look at what Doug called for him, it's probably a fraction of the playbook. So he went out there with basically, nothing around him again and not even a full complimentary playbook and still made enough plays to win this game. Now, I want to talk about how Jalen Hurts' performance really vindicated a lot of people and it really damned Carson Wentz. Now, number one, Doug Peterson looked like, hey, you know what? The guy can call plays. And we're going to go over why I think that is important, because a lot of people are making the argument that, that game plan looked really tailored to Jalen Hurts' strengths. It looked like he was running the ball more, and I think that there's more to it than that. I don't think that this was tailored to Jalen Hurts' strength as much as Jalen Hurts probably allowed Doug Peterson to do his job, where I think a lot of times Carson Wentz, when he's sitting in the room game planning and saying things, and this is a story that came out a while ago, that Carson Wentz, it's something we all kind of brushed off, that Carson Wentz either wasn't coachable or Carson Wentz wasn't necessarily allowing the offensive coordinator at the time, Mike Groh, to call plays that he wanted. There's been things coming out from behind the scenes, a lot of things that really suggest that maybe Carson Wentz is the problem when it comes to game planning and what plays they want to run, because he feels empowered or entitled by that $100 million contract. Jalen Hurts is trying to cut his teeth in the NFL. He's not going to say, well, you know what, I don't want to run this or I don't want to run that, like Carson Wentz might feel that he's capable of doing. We always say that the offense looks so much different when Nick Foles is running it on the way to the Super Bowl compared to how Carson Wentz has been running it when it's been failing. Well, maybe it's Carson Wentz putting in too much input. Maybe he needs to check his ego, which I think is probably more to the point. There was a huge story that broke at the end of the last season in 2019, or maybe it was 2018. I don't necessarily remember, but it was a huge story that basically was painting Carson Wentz as not a very good teammate. He was bullying Mike Groh. He was selfish, uncompromising, playing favorites. There were so many things that nobody could really wrap their head around based off of the fact that Carson Wentz seems like such a nice guy. He's this really high character, quality guy. He's a devout Christian or whatever his religion is. I mean, I know he's got a charity that he puts a lot of time into, and there's so many things that say, like, this guy's a good guy, that it was really hard to digest the possibility that maybe he's not a very good teammate and that he's not very coachable and he's too headstrong when it comes to what he wants to run. I mean, nobody is going to question this guy's work ethic. I think you can compare. He's probably the first guy there, the last guy to leave type of guy. I'm sure he puts in the time, but it just seems like, for one, I mean, he probably, when he was having all these struggles this year, I didn't hear one offensive player come out and say he's working really hard, he's doing this, he's doing that. Nobody came to his defense. Brandon Graham did the week before he got benched, and Brandon Graham is not a guy, I'm sure throughout the week, the offensive and defensive players don't spend a ton of time together and see, I mean, they might see what's going on, but ultimately, that's just an odd person to come out. Brandon Graham's just a very vocal leader of the team, and I'm sure that he felt the need to defend his quarterback and try to bring this team together. But it wasn't until after Carson Wentz got benched that somebody came out, and that was Jason Kelce, and said that, you know what, it sucks that he's taking the fall for all of our failures. I mean, that doesn't even hold water, to be honest with you. If you look at the stats going into the game, the Green Bay game, which was his last game as a starter, they had the third best rushing average of any team in the league. Average per attempt, they were third best, and I'm sure that's going up by now based off of the success they've had recently. But they were third best rushing attempts per game. So I mean, that alone, doesn't that suggest that somebody's doing their job? I mean, the offensive line has to be doing their job. Miles Sanders and the running backs have to be doing their job if they're running the ball well. So if he's saying that the failings are a part of the entire team, not just Carson Wentz, well, then you got to at least say that's just the passing game, right? When do you remember receivers this year dropping balls like they have in years past? I mean, I've seen that in years past where receivers, you know, Nelson Aguilar, Alshon Jeffrey are some of they're just dropping balls left and right, or, you know, and you can watch that and say, okay, well, then you gave Carson that excuse, which is something that we gave a lot last year when Nelson Aguilar especially was dropping touchdowns, wide open touchdowns and stuff like that, or not going after, he's not running, you know, giving his full effort on deep balls and stuff like that. You could see that. I can't say I've seen that this year, to be honest with you. And I'm sure that they're, you know, the other argument is they're not getting separation. Well, in this game, just yesterday, it looked like they were getting separation just fine. Jalen Reagor, especially, I mean, obviously that one crosser that he ran, that Jalen kind of threw a little bit off. But that was a deep crosser where it looked like Jalen Reagor got separation. And for the most part, the receivers looked like they did a pretty decent job of getting separation against one of the best defenses in the league. Same thing against the Packers. The Packers have one of the better secondaries in the league, and he looked just fine. The receivers looked just fine. They looked like they were getting separation all of a sudden. So to me, it really seems like a tough argument to say that everybody's failing, but statistically, you don't see that. You know what I mean? I mean, that's just the exact opposite. And the defense has been playing well all year. So to me, it's pretty obvious that the main issue this entire season, and what probably ultimately will have cost the Eagles their season, is Carson Wentz's historically bad play through the first, you know, 10 or 11 games, how many games he started. I really think that that's statistically that bears out, because going into this Saints game, they had a top 10 defense. And I think that they showed that. They showed up. The only real time that they started giving up points is when Slay and McLeod were out, which is two of the your best defenders. McLeod now out for the season with a torn ACL. But ultimately, you know, the defense, without a doubt, played their heart out, and they gave a big touchdown once they had a guy who you and me never heard of. I don't even remember his name. Once he was on the field, he got burnt. And it's like, well, what do you expect? You know what I mean? At that point, you're going to go after that guy, especially since, you know, I mean, I don't even, you know, all I know is he was number 41. I don't even remember who it was. So that's obviously, the defense has not been the issue. The running game has not been the issue. The passing game has been the issue. And Jalen Hurts comes in and looks competent enough that they win the game. I mean, it's something simple like, you know, I don't think anybody needed Jalen Hurts to go out there and throw for 400 yards in his first NFL start. I don't really think that anybody expected that, and I don't think that this team needed that this entire time. This team needed competent quarterback play, which they have not been getting under Carson Wentz. Carson Wentz, I mean, he's been one of the most sacked quarterbacks in the league. Insert Jalen Hurts. He gets sacked zero times against the Saints, and they have a pretty good pass rush. That's not a team that doesn't have a pass rush. And it's not like they weren't sending it either. I mean, I'm sure they were maintaining their rush lanes and stuff like that. A lot of times when you have a mobile quarterback, it changes some things. It changes some coverage looks. A lot of times you got to have a spy out there, and you know, you got to make sure you stay in your lane so that the mobile quarterback doesn't get off. So things like that, I'm sure that they were doing, but ultimately at the end of the day, they were sending some crazy heat, and it wasn't working. Jalen Hurts was either pre-snap reading and getting it out early on timing. He was either seeing it ahead of time, getting the ball out where it needed to go. He was throwing way more accurately. If you're going to say anything, his passes were way more accurate, better placement. He allowed players to make plays after they caught the ball. I mean, there were so many little things that Jalen Hurts did and that a competent QB can do that would have won us a lot of games this year that Carson Wentz really struggled with. So much so that, I mean, I really think we got to take a trip down memory lane, which is something else that people are completely forgetting, that this is not the first time Carson Wentz has essentially been benched by the Eagles organization. And this is something I'm probably going to get a lot of blowback on, but it's reality. People forget that Carson Wentz was actually benched once before because he was not playing well and because the season was pretty much over. And that was 2 years ago when Nick Foles took over for the 5-6 Philadelphia Eagles, and Carson Wentz was essentially benched mostly because of a back injury, but it was not necessarily something he couldn't play through. And I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to try to refresh you guys' memory that Carson Wentz was, in fact, dealing with a back injury for about a month. He was playing through a back injury for about a month before he actually succumbed to the point where they said, you know what, let's just pull him. He's not looking good because, you know, basically they said it was the back injury. They tried to play it off as the back injury. Maybe that was a big part of it. But now, 2 years later, when you look at the fact that he's fully healthy and he was completely, you know, inconsistent and playing horribly again, maybe this is what Carson Wentz is. Maybe it's not as simple as, you know, he's having a bad year. Because to me, I could easily make the argument that he's had three straight bad years with a really good four-game stretch last year to end the season against bad teams. But ultimately, it looks to me like he's had three straight bad years. You could easily make that argument, even though statistically, once again, statistics don't tell the whole story. 3 years ago when the back injury happened, he actually was completing around 70% of his passes. So there was some success there. But ultimately, I mean, you can look at all this and say that, you know, I think that there's more of a problem to Carson than people are leading on. I don't think it's as simple as Carson Wentz is just having a bad year. I think he's having a bad career after 2017. And I think, I don't know if it's because he's being too headstrong and he's just fighting with the coaches for what they want to run. But I know Jalen Hurts didn't do that. Jalen Hurts did not say, I don't want to run that play because, you know, I'm Jalen Hurts. That's something that sounds like Carson's been doing behind the scenes. And when the story came out that Carson Wentz, you know, was basically being a bad teammate and uncoachable and uncompromising and stuff like that, nobody ever really knew what the source of that was. It was always an unnamed source. And Carson Wentz came out and owned it anyway, which validated it. They didn't need to name a source because he came out and owned it and said, I could be a better teammate. And obviously there's stuff there. There's been a lot of stuff behind the scenes over the years that have come out. That was the first one that really came out and was like a full expose from top to bottom of all the issues. Before that, it was always little stories, little blurbs. Like, you know, they thought it was all Sean Jeffrey leaking stuff to Jacina Anderson. I always felt like it was Nelson Aguilar because all Sean Jeffrey's still here and we haven't seen any leaks to anybody now as far as, you know, behind the scenes stuff. I always felt that was Nelson Aguilar who was in a contract year at the time and wasn't getting the ball. So I felt like he was the one voicing his displeasure, you know, to whoever would hear him. And that's how that stuff came out. Like I said, we'll never really know. A lot of people say it was all Sean. Maybe all Sean's, you know, says he's been exposed. Maybe maybe he's being quiet now. But ultimately, there's been a lot of people that behind the scenes have always been seen as Foles people. It's never really been explained. Maybe they, you know, a lot of people said they wanted to keep Foles behind the scenes. Once again, no real, you know, clear vision of this, of these things. It's just a lot of stuff that has leaked out. But now you look at it, there hasn't been as many leaks this year, but Carson has played so poorly, you can't say it hasn't affected the team. And as far as the you know, the story, the original story coming out about how Carson wasn't a good teammate and all that stuff, I always had a quiet suspicion that that was Doug. And it might sound funny now because Doug has backed him so much publicly, even during this benching. But I always felt like that was Doug trying to put him on blast publicly to say, dude, rein in your ego. I'm a good coach. I'm a Super Bowl winning head coach. You need to run the stuff we want you to run. You need to be more coachable. Coaches have done that in the past. A lot of times, like great coaches, like Phil Jackson, has called out great players in the media, in things like that. NFL's a little bit differently. I don't necessarily suggest. I mean, we saw Bruce Arians doing it to Tom Brady this year several times. You know, I mean, there's lots of times where coaches will do that. I don't think Doug is that type of guy. I don't think he's the type of guy that will go about that way. But I think he wanted to send a message. He wanted some pressure on Carson to change his ways, and I think that might have been him. There's somebody high ranking in the organization, whether it was him, maybe it was Groh, maybe it was Mike Groh, who's named in the piece as one of the people that was being suggested to be bullied by Carson Wentz. Or maybe obviously if you're being bullied by a quarterback, you don't want that to go around if you're a coach, that you're being bullied. So I can't really imagine it was him. I always felt like it was Doug. I really did. I always felt like Doug was the one that leaked that stuff out, that leaked that piece out to whoever, and was just trying to basically send a message that Carson Wentz has to change his behavioral patterns and kind of step in line, because Doug proved yesterday he's a great coach. He proved that yesterday by getting his team ready and playing the way that they did and playing around a rookie quarterback that's never played an NFL game. The game plan looked great. The execution looked great. It looked creative again. That's the thing that we've been missing, that so many people have said, where has the creativity gone since the 2017 season? They were pointing over to Indianapolis and saying, nah, man, it was obviously the assistant that became the head coach over there. It all went with Frank Reich. Obviously, it didn't go with Frank Reich. Obviously, it's always been under Doug's capability to do that. Somebody has been preventing it, and I think it's pretty obvious. I think it's pretty obvious that Carson Wentz has been preventing this from behind the scenes. I think he wants to run more of a traditional pro-style offense, and he doesn't want to run these, you know, almost gadget-type looking plays, where Jalen Hurts was like, yeah, I'll run that. You know what I mean? And you have to make it, you know, you have to make it plain what it is. I don't think that Carson Wentz, we almost should be happy if that's what it is. Maybe Carson Wentz isn't broken as far as a player. Maybe he's just his own worst enemy, and he can still be salvageable if he reins in his ego and starts to play more to what Doug Peterson wants to do, or maybe be more coachable. There's possible ways that he could be salvaged. But at this point, now you have Jalen Hurts out there looking like a great player. Do you even want to go back to the Carson Wentz experiment? Because that's what it looks like now. But without a doubt, I mean, all these things definitely vindicated Doug Peterson. And I think it all basically makes Carson Wentz look even worse, which, you know, like I said, maybe this will make him mature. Maybe this will make him want out. Either way, it doesn't really matter. At this point, we have a big game next week against the Arizona Cardinals. And I mean, I want to save a breakdown for that. Hopefully I can do a breakdown for that later in the week. But if the Eagles can beat the Saints, they can beat any team in the NFC, and they can go on a run here. They really only have one more tough game, and their playoffs hopes are basically as alive and well as you think they could be. The Redskins are going to be the biggest issue. The Redskins have to lose one of their next three games, one of the next two games, rather, because the Eagles play them the final game of the year. And I think it's to the point where the season could easily come down to that. I don't want to be a conspiracy theorist, but I do think that the NFL likes big stories, and they like big fan bases. And the Eagles have a much bigger story and fan base than the Washington Redskins. So if you watch the Washington Redskins and you see some phantom penalties, or you're seeing, you know, the Redskins get penalized 12 times compared to whoever they're playing gets penalized like one time. You know what I mean? I do feel like the league has preferential treatment towards large fan bases. And the Eagles are one of the best fan bases in the league. So, and the Redskins, they just don't seem to have a fan base at all. I mean, if you go to their games, you're probably sitting by yourself. The Redskins are known for not having a very passionate fan base. I think that Daniel Snyder and their lack of success over the last couple decades has taken that out of their fan base. Even now, I don't think that any Washington Redskins fans are really getting excited about winning the worst division in the league in league history. I don't think that that Alex Smith and his play is necessarily exciting the Redskins fan base. So if they want to, I mean, the Eagles, they should want the Eagles or the Cowboys to get into the playoffs every year, even the Giants. Although the Giants, I mean, that's another team. I don't think Daniel Jones really moves the needle for anybody. I think that Jalen Hurts making it to the playoffs with the Eagles and the Carson Wentz drama that would continue throughout the entire offseason would be a great investment for the NFL. More than the Redskins winning or the Giants winning or even the Cowboys. I mean, maybe the Cowboys coming back and winning would be something they would want, but obviously they, whoever gets into the playoffs probably isn't going anywhere, anywhere from this division anyway. But I do think that, you know, if I was a conspiracy theorist, I would suggest at the very least that we're going to see a meaningful game week 17 between the Eagles and the Redskins. Somebody is going to lose. You know, there's several different playoff scenarios going around out there right now that the Eagles can still be alive all the way to week 17 if they only beat the Redskins. So it wouldn't surprise me that playoff scenario plays out. I don't think that the league, that's why the league sets up these divisional games at the end of the year anyway. They want to see playoff style games at the end of the year, and I think we will see that. I think the Eagles will at the very least beat the Giants because they probably could have beat them. Once again, just competent quarterback play is the only thing that's been missing from this team all year. They have a top 10 run game, top 10 defense. What else do you need? They're just dead last in passing, and they're dead last in turnovers for the most part. So that's enough to submarine an entire team. I think that they will beat the Redskins or the Cardinals if they get Darius Slay back, because obviously, you know, Rodney McLeod's missing for the rest of the season. He's been a huge part to the success of this defense. But I think the biggest issue going against the Cardinals is going to be DeAndre Hopkins. If you don't have Darius Slay out there, to at least keep DeAndre Hopkins somewhat in check, that's going to be a very tough game to win. So that's probably going to be the biggest part of it. Like I said, I'll try to do a full breakdown show of this later in the week. I wanted to do one for the Saints, and I swear to you, I wanted to pick the Eagles to beat the Saints, but I just didn't. You know, I don't have a lot of followers right now anyway. This is a brand new podcast, so I was like, whatever, I had other things to do. But ultimately, I really do feel like they could go on a run here. I feel like this is still a championship quality team as far as, you know, they have champion players on it. I don't want to say that this is a team that can win a title this season, but they still have a lot of the guys left over from 2017. They still know how to turn it on late in the year, and I think that they're still hungry to possibly, they don't want their season to be over, and I think that they look at Jalen Hurts as new life. You can see the energy. You can see that this team is playing with a new purpose and a new identity, and I think that they're going to at very least give the Cardinals everything that they can handle, and I think they're going to win. Like I said, I do think that the league wants these last playoff games, these last week of the season games to matter as much as possible. So I wouldn't be surprised if you see favorable calls for the Eagles and non-favorable calls for the Redskins against the Seahawks, which obviously the Seahawks are a very tough team to beat. And I think that the Eagles could probably, I'm not the Eagles, I'm sorry, the Washington Redskins could probably lose that game, basically bringing them within a half a game of one another going into the final 2 weeks, which I think is, once again, I mean, the half game, everybody said since they got that half game could really be the decider between the Eagles, you know, making the playoffs or not making the playoffs, and I still think that it might be. So we're going to find out. But I'm going to go ahead and end the podcast there. So if you guys enjoyed this, if you're still listening, like I said, please follow. I'm going to try to do as many shows as possible, maybe two or three a week, all about the Eagles for now until the offseason starts. When the offseason starts, I'll probably, I mean, I love the offseason more than the regular season most times being an Eagles fan, so I'm definitely going to break down a lot of stuff there. So until next time, this has been Kevin Woodman with Philadelphia Eagles Talk.